Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the March 17th, 2015 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. It's St. Patrick's Day. Lots of green around the table. Congratulations to all who are Irish and all those who wish they were today. I just point out that there are emergency exits to the back of the room on my right and to the front of the room on my left. If you have any electronic devices, please silence them. And that goes for legislators as well. I wonder if you'd stand with me while we recite the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May we have the roll call, please?
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne will be a little late this evening. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
The 11 members present.
The quorum is here. We have presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Very pleased tonight. We have a nomination for Distinguished Youth. We haven't had one in a few months. And so I'd like to call legislator Dan Klein from Danby, Caroline area, up to the podium to make that presentation.
Thank you, Mike. Aiden McKenzie is a Brooktondale native and a junior at Ithaca High School, and he's about to turn 17 next week, I think, right? Aiden has accomplished a lot in his time. He's on the Ithaca High School tennis team, which I understand he came directly here from his tennis practice. He's taken 3 AP classes and 2 honors classes. Last summer, he attended a summer program at St. John's College, Annapolis, where he read and discussed works that are the foundation of our democracy, including the U.S. Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, Supreme Court decisions, speeches of Lincoln and Douglas, and Plato's Republic. In 2014, Aiden spent a...
Dan, could you point the microphone a little bit more toward you?
How's that? In 2014, Aiden spent a week with his church youth group on a mission trip to the Dominican Republic, where he lived with a family in a remote town and worked to improve the parish school there. He helped residents in Appalachian after the flood of 2011 by shoveling mud out of a church and working to help move ruined furniture out of a house. Aiden recently earned the rank of Eagle Scout with Troop 55 in Ithaca. His Eagle project was to construct a deer fence around a planned garden at St. Catherine of Siena Church. He designed the fence, obtained the funding and the materials, and organized about 30 volunteers to build it. The garden is to be used for the church teen youth group to grow food for loaves and fishes. I have a whole list here of all these other things that he's done, and it's way too much to read here, but it's a very impressive list of things for somebody to do. And I'm proud to be part of Aiden getting his Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award. So I'd like to call Aiden up now. He has a few words he'd like to say, too.
Does his family want to come up, too?
They do not.
Hello, everyone. Over the past several years, I've been lucky enough to experience some truly amazing things and take part in many great experiences. None of these things would have been possible if not for a quite large group of people in my life. I'd like to thank a few of them here this afternoon. First off, I'd like to thank everyone here who nominated me for this award. I'm truly honored. I'd like to thank my parents for helping me with all the large and little things that I've done throughout my life. I would like to thank my tennis coach, Mike Bryant and the Ithaca Youth Bureau for getting me started in tennis, and my pastor, Father Joe, for being my pastor for the past 5 years and presenting me with the opportunity to do my Eagle Project. I'd like to thank everyone that has helped me during my career in scouting, but one in particular, Liam Murphy, for helping me with my Eagle Project and being my scoutmaster the past 4 years. And finally, I'd like to thank all my teachers from every school I've attended for keeping my academic experience both challenging and enjoyable. Thank you.
So, Liam, we've got this award here and also a couple of goodies that were donated, so I just want to thank the sponsors of the goodies. We have Bangs Ambulance, Specialty Trophy and Awards of Dryden, Purity Ice Cream, and the Cayuga Radio Group. So, and we also have this plaque from the legislature, so why don't we start with that? This is going to be an important skill in life. Hold the plaque with that hand. Shake with that hand, buddy, and just keep smiling. Just keep smiling. Here are some things that these different businesses have donated. Thanks, Lynn. Thanks. Thank you, everybody.
All those efforts made me tired just listening to them. Mm-hmm. What a pretty nice accomplishment for a young man. There will be an executive session tonight to discuss labor negotiations. Let's go to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity for the public to speak to us on any subject for up to 3 minutes. And if anyone wants to speak on privilege of the floor, we ask them to fill out one of the blue cards on the back table and pass it up. By signing the card, the person who's speaking is promising or agreeing to a three-minute time limit, and we will have a clock showing the countdown, hopefully. There'll be, at the end of the time, a light telephone ring, which indicates the time is up. And please conclude at that point if you haven't already. You're agreeing to not raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. And you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. So we're going to start this evening with. And when you come up to the microphone, please state your name and your municipality, if you would, that you live in. Victor Tiffany, I have first. After Victor, I have Josephine Cardamone.
Victor Tiffany.
Danby, I am the coordinator for a move to amend in Ithaca, and I'll try not to be seditious. The night or day before he was elected to the White House, then Senator Obama promised that if elected, he would fundamentally transform the United States. And up to this point, I don't think Obamacare quite qualifies for that. However, in the coming months, he is aiming to introduce into Congress and have passed massive, significant trade and regulatory treaties, and these are treaties, that will impose from above, not from below, from above, an entirely new set of order, rules, regulations. Take the Trans-Pacific Partnership that he's hired a team of corporate lawyers to try to get through Congress. 29 chapters of 25 of those chapters are about trade, lower tariffs and the like. 24 of those chapters are written to regulate you. You and everyone around the country who writes laws. Every legislator in state legislation, everybody in Congress. So everyone here knows how federalism works, right? We, the people, elect our representatives who hopefully share our interests and our values to pass laws reflecting those principles and values. And if we don't like the way that person votes, we get them out of office and put someone else in. That actually still works at the local level. The Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Pact would invert federalism. I can't think of anything that's more anti-American, because what it would do is literally tie your hands for a wide swath of regulatory activities that you normally engage in. So you wouldn't be able to limit certain activities of a foreign-based transnational corporation that wants to do business, manufacturing or whatever, here in Tompkins County. And if you did, they would sue you in a kangaroo court that I'll describe at a future date. And if they win that lawsuit, who's going to pay? We, the taxpayers. And is it going to benefit the taxpayers? Is it going to help development in any way or projects? No, it'll go to that foreign corporation. And this is widespread. So I'll be back in a couple of weeks to talk about the TPA, the Trade Promotion Authority, Fast Track. And in 4 weeks, I will talk about these investor state dispute settlement tribunals. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Josephine Cardamon, please.
Hi, I'm Josephine Cardamon from Ithaca, New York, and I'm here to support the county's support of the HALT bill currently before the New York State Legislature. HALT stands for Humane Alternatives to Long-Term Confinement, Solitary Confinement. Why would we want to restrict solitary confinement? Isn't that for the most violent offenders that make it dangerous for everybody else in the prison? Well, actually, no. 5 out of 6 people in solitary confinement are there for minor infractions. A lot of times they don't even know what rule they broke. Could be because they have too many stamps in their cell. The United Nations says that the way that solitary confinement is used in the United States is torture. And it's torture because putting someone inside a very small room for 23 hours a day, when they get out, they're allowed to exercise in a cage by themselves. Leaving them in that room, really kind of a box, with no meaningful human contact for weeks, months, years, and decades is torture. And the bill currently in front of the state legislature is to reduce that to a maximum of 15 days. And if the person really needs some kind of treatment because of their behavior, then they should get that. So I'm very excited that our county is considering supporting this bill and letting the rest of the state know that we don't want torture being done in our names. Thank you.
Thank you. Next I have Ken Blakinger. I'm sorry, it's Carrie. Carrie, you got to write better. I'm seeing Ken.
Hi, I'm Carrie Blakinger, City of Ithaca. I think I know most of you, and I think I've spoken to or emailed with a number of you individually about this. I'm speaking in support of the solitary confinement resolution that you're looking at today. I think Joey said pretty much what needs to be said, so I don't really want to rehash things, but I'll be around to answer questions when we get to this. And as someone who is a survivor of solitary confinement, I just wanted to urge you all to pass this. I think that we consider ourselves a county that's progressive and forward-looking when it comes to matters of criminal justice, and I think that passing that would show this. That's all.
Thank you, Carrie. Last one I have in front of me is Sherry Corthus. If there's anyone else wants to speak, please sign a blue card and send it forward.
Okay, hi. Sherry Corthus, Ithaca, New York. First, I would like to thank legislators Chalk, McBean, Claiborne, and Hera for voting against the Tompkins County Jail Modification Project. And thank you for your kind and compassionate vote. I would also like to encourage all the legislators to vote yes on the resolution urging the New York State Assembly and the Senate to pass the Humane Alternatives to Long-Term Solitary Confinement Act, as it is cruel and inhumane punishment, and it is torture, plain and simple. I mean, if you can think of yourself inside of a box for 15 days, I think that's torture. The fact that we're going to limit it to 15 days is sort of upsetting. And then I wanted to talk next about the meeting that I came to last night, if that is okay. I was here from 5 until 7:30, and I had to leave. Disgusted, maybe, would be the good word, the right word, but here's a woman who lost her husband and her children's father, and she lost her home and everything. And last night was the sheriff's report, and all it was is justification to use all this military equipment. And it is military equipment they're using against U.S. citizens on U.S. soil. And I just don't see that as right. And I tried to read the 34-page report today. Again, it just seems to me that there should be more. And I think we should have apologized. Somebody, I don't know if we've apologized, if the legislator or the sheriff or anybody has apologized for what's happened to her family. And, you know, I don't know. And the robot you used that they, you know, the one that the city of Ithaca recently purchased one, so it may be the one they used, they said it didn't work. But the reason they purchased this robot, and here's, is that it's the number, the basic principle is that it puts a piece of equipment in harm's way and keeps officers and others at a safe distance. It can be used to search a building from the exterior, barricaded person with a weapon. So it could do that from, so it can do cameras, can be used to assist in a hazmat situation, can send robot down with test items or to manipulate items. The mechanical arm can be used to manipulate things. You can take the lid off a garbage can that may have a suspicious item in it. Camera car then zooms in on the item. The camera can then zoom in on it. And this robot will save lives and reduce the use of valuable and costly resources. They used the robot. It didn't work. They brought in, by my count, 6 APCs, I think. I don't know. Too many. The Rook. It was too much. And I just think you guys should think more about it, and that sheriff's report was just not, I don't know. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move to privilege of the floor for municipal officials, but I don't see any tonight. So seeing none, I will move on to privilege of the floor for legislators. Would someone like to speak tonight? Don't see any hands. Shall we move on?
No.
Martha's hands.
I go through my ED report.
If someone wants to speak, please let me know. This is amazing. We'll move on next to our special presentation tonight. I'd like to invite Lisa Holmes up, who is the our director of the Office for the Aging. I think she has a presentation to talk to us about some exciting things in her office, her strategic plan, and other things. We need to drop the screens. Just wait just a moment while we drop the screens, and then we'll have you start, please.
So, while you're doing that, will we take the resolution about her program out of order, or after her presentation?
Like to do that. We also have some people, looks like they're going to wait for another resolution from the public.
Up to you.
Cool action.
Please.
We can start? Okay, great. And I'm just waiting for the... Okay, terrific. Well, thank you for having me here tonight. I think that this will be a good overview of kind of the status of older adults in Tompkins County and where we're going from here in terms of planning for needs. So as this body knows, in 2012, the Office for the Aging completed a community-wide needs assessment in relation to aging, which was a random sample survey and statistically significant sample size where we could generalize to the whole of the Tompkins County population about the needs there. In 2014, we also conducted a housing needs and preferences survey looking specifically at housing needs. And then later that year, we convened this consensus conference process, which gave us a lot of great qualitative data about needs and issues and recommendations for action. So that's what I'm going to focus on tonight. And I just want to back up and say this is a role of offices for aging everywhere, is to stay abreast of community needs and plan for them, and not necessarily be the only ones working to meet those needs, but to assist the community in identifying and planning to meet those needs. So late last year, starting with the summer and in through the fall of 2014, we started a process where we engaged older adults and many community stakeholders on what was basically a SWOT analysis to articulate our community's strengths, issues and needs, and opportunities, recommendations for action across 8 topic areas that are relevant to aging: civic engagement, volunteerism and education, financial exploitation and elder abuse, financial security and employment, housing, long-term care, medical care, mental health, and transportation. And many of these topic areas are overlapping, and we recognize that, but we convened 8 different, essentially, focus groups on these topics. As a result, there were 145 community stakeholders and older adults engaged in these conversations. We have written summaries of each session, and all of these written summaries about the specifics of each session are available on our website. And we're using these results to inform our planning efforts to address the needs of older adults in the community. And we really want to encourage other public and private entities and community organizations to use these results as well. So our methods in convening these consensus conferences, each session was about 2.5 hours in length. We provided background materials prior to each conference, and so people could read ahead of time and kind of set the stage. Again, we tried to invite a very broad, diverse, inclusive group to each session, including older adults, community members, public and private sector representatives. We really did try to stretch beyond the usual suspects that we talked to in relation to these topics. And we asked each group to consider certain questions, what areas we needed to address to serve a diverse elderly population, how to address the needs of rural elders in our rural community. Are there other best practices in other communities that we'd like to replicate? Technology solutions to consider, and any kind of learning or training needs that we might be able to get assistance with from our local colleges and universities. Then we went into the discussions of the SWOT analysis, and we had the participants at the end vote on the priorities for action. So, and before I get into the results, I just wanted to draw your attention to a few slides, and these types of background demographic information were shared with each of the consensus conference participants. But this kind of sets the stage for the conversation, why we're talking about this, why this is relevant, and why we need to think about and plan for this. So the shaded cells on this chart show the peaks in the population by age cohort. So right about now, we're in 2015, if you look at 2010, the basically 0 to 64 age group, that's the where we're at the peak right now. So our older adult population, the peak right now is relatively younger. Many of them are still working, driving, very socially engaged, may have disposable income. When we're looking at more out into ages or the years 2030 and 2040, we're seeing our older adult population, and the that bulge of the baby boomers aging and in the age ranges where they're more likely to have long-term care needs. So these are the years that we really want to take into consideration when we're looking at these across these topics. Just a couple of other quick slides. This is just really looking at population ratios. I've seen them referred to as dependency ratios. This first slide shows, for instance, in 1990, for every five people of the traditional working ages, 25 to 64, there was one person of retirement age, age 65 plus. Again, these are generalizations here, but as you can see, in 2030, that number will be reduced here in these are Tompkins County figures, 2.7 people of working age for every one person of retirement age. And then this last demographic slide shows, a similar projection here. We're comparing the number of people of working age to those age 85 plus, those likely to be most frail. And again, in 1990, that number was about 43-1. And we're looking now to 2040, that number drops to about 15-1. So that has implications in terms of who is going to be available, who's going to be in the workforce, and who's going to be available to provide long-term care services for our most frail. So starting with the strengths and highlights that were identified in this process, this consensus conference process, the strengths and highlights of our community, certainly across all of the different eight topic areas, higher education in our community was pointed to for all of the strengths that it brings in terms of jobs, our economy, and our low unemployment rate here. Ithaca College Gerontology Institute and Cornell Institute for Translational Research on Aging bring a lot of expertise and to our community and do a lot in terms of community engagement and training of professionals in aging. It also leads to that we have a highly educated and engaged older adult population here. We have a community of human services that are well networked, and for a community our size, we have many different options available for housing for older adults and many different options available for transportation. There are some flip sides to that too, but for a community our size, we do have those strengths. Some of the issues and needs that were identified, and again, there were many, these are just kind of looking at the highlights. Across the board, what was discussed was that today's 60 and over population do not identify as senior citizens. So this is something that service providers such as the Office for the Aging and several others need to take into account when we are conducting outreach, when we are, what we're calling people, what we're naming them. Other issues that were discussed, talking about age discrimination faced by older workers. Certainly, service providers talked about stagnant or even decreased funding, which supports an aging population while the demands are increasing as the population is increasing. And many different transportation issues were discussed, and these issues aren't necessarily unique to older adults. They're transportation issues that affect all ages in Tompkins County. The lack of transportation in rural areas among elders, it could exacerbate social isolation. The need for same-day transportation, often gadabout transportation needs to be booked 2 days in advance. Crossing county lines is an issue, particularly to regional medical centers. After hours and weekend transportation, and the recruitment and retention of volunteer drivers that support transportation provision. I also, we said that there were many different housing options for a community our size, but on the flip side of that is there's a lack of affordable housing. Again, this is not unique to older adults, but it certainly does affect the older adult population here. Certain factors that are important for older adults are the built environment, the accessibility of the housing stock, the affordability and the location, whether it is centrally located or has access to public transportation and has access to services. Another issue was the integration of people with serious and persistent mental illness into existing senior housing and those populations. There is a lack of affordable assisted living in Tompkins County, and there is not an assisted living program that accepts Medicaid in our county. There are in surrounding counties, but not in Tompkins County. And that leads to some older adults who stay in unsafe home environments, or they're prematurely placed in skilled nursing facilities. They don't necessarily have that level of need, but nursing facilities accept Medicaid. Assisted living, the current assisted living does not. Or some seniors are forced to leave the county for this level of care. And also the lack of adequate care for people with dementia within skilled nursing facilities is an issue. By and large, it was pointed out that the current systems of medical care, mental health, and long-term care are fractured, are difficult to navigate for consumers, and the resources are stretched thin. And they are not person-centered. They are driven by how much you make, your income, your payer source. There are also some needs pointed to a lack of physicians accepting new Medicare patients in Tompkins County and a lack of geriatricians in Tompkins County. Certainly, we know that there's a shortage of home health aides and certified nursing assistants. And this has been the case and is the case currently. And as we could see with those population projections, that need is only going to increase. And then overall, in our rural community and with people living longer, living alone, family size decreasing, there are fewer informal supports, which could lead to social isolation. And it just makes the earlier and intermediate stages of cognitive decline among older adults difficult to detect and therefore difficult to address. There are a number of recommendations that were pointed to in the report along each topic area, but something that just came up across the board that we wanted to address is just to have a very comprehensive public education, information, and community outreach campaign about what does exist in terms of services and how people can find help. And to that end, I want to take this opportunity because hot off the presses, we do have some information about an upcoming event, a senior living expo, coming up in April in conjunction with the Gerontology Institute, which is going to be a great place under one roof for individuals to get a lot of information about all of the services available in Tompkins County. We'll have 32 vendors there. But we do want to continue to get the word out about these, about many different issues and services available, and in doing so, considering the needs of our diverse older adult community in Tompkins County. There were many recommendations made about civic engagement, volunteerism, and education. It's widely felt that the longer that we can assist older adults in remaining healthy, active, engaged, and volunteering in our community certainly is better for our community and enriching for older adults. So several different recommendations were made around volunteerism in the county. Several different recommendations addressing the medical long-term care and mental health systems, certainly moving from a payer-directed to a person-directed model, and advocating for those types of services that do not currently exist in Tompkins County. And I do want to say that many of these action steps are already being taken, or there is movement on some of these. But we are, the Office for the Aging and others are advocating for a Medicaid-funded assisted living in Tompkins County, a medical model adult daycare, and along all of these lines here. Additional recommendations include having additional congregate meal sites in Tompkins County to increase social engagement, advocating encourage more geriatricians to provide services here in Tompkins County. Again, elevating the status of personal care aides wherever possible through increased income benefits and training. Establishing a village in Tompkins County is something that is also in the works, and a virtual village is something that is known in the aging community. It's not a built environment, but it is a service which enables individuals to age in place and age in community, and there is a nonprofit forming modeled after the Beacon Hill Village in Boston. So lots of action in along some of these lines. Several recommendations around transportation to enhance the capacity of existing transportation services. So the fact that Gadabout does exist in Tompkins County, but trying to increase the capacity to be able to serve, provide same-day services, perhaps expanding into hours and weekends, and trying to crack the code for those out-of-county medical needs, exploring regional multi-county solutions. And also supporting aging drivers and trying to assist those who are retiring from driving, and educating about other options that are available there. Several recommendations also in the housing arena in terms of trying to increase the housing supply to reduce the housing costs, advocating for accessible design in new housing, and just trying to cluster housing around services and public transportation, considering transportation needs with new housing being built. So this was really just a quick overview of all of our findings, but we are very excited about our next steps and where we want to go with all of these findings. This is one step, is just presenting the findings across the community. Sharing this information with our partners, public and private entities, to address the needs of older adults in the community, because we can't do it alone. We want to use these results to inform other efforts that are happening locally and statewide. For instance, the Medicaid redesign process is happening on the state level, and there's a lot of involvement in that locally with the DSRIP, Delivery System Reform Incentive Program. So feeding this information wherever possible into these efforts that are happening all around us. And the last thing I do want to focus on here is simultaneous to this, the write-up of these results is the consideration of the designation of Ithaca and Tompkins County as an age-friendly community. And this is something that we've, again, been in discussions with our community partners and with Ithaca College Gerontology Institute. And I wanted to recognize Dr. Rhoda Medor is here from the Gerontology Institute also, and has been a proponent of this as well. this age-friendly community designation is, again, a World Health Organization designation to promote and assist localities in making improvements to support residents of all ages. If we were to move forward on this, it would put our community on the map, along with several other communities and cities across the nation and across the globe, as seeing that these issues are important and taking steps to continually improve ourselves around these issues. It would provide us access to best practices that are being used and ideas and things that have been tried in other communities with success, and it would also allow us to share our good ideas with other communities. And it also it would provide us with a framework for our continuous improvement. So what the hard work that we've already put in and the many things that we've already done as a community would fit very nicely into that framework. The framework actually already has 8 different domains that it looks at in terms of aging, and we have looked at 8 different domains as well, and they match up very nicely. So this would provide us with a framework for moving forward and continually trying to make it a community for all ages. And I mentioned our partnership with the Gerontology Institute. It would also enable us to engage many other different sectors of our community in these conversations moving forward. So, and along with that, there is a resolution in your packet. I'm not certain in what order you wanted to consider that, but the resolution speaks to the that designation. And then, again, I just wanted to say, if for the public, anyone who is tuning in, if people have comments or additions to our plan or are interested in getting involved, to please contact us at the Office for the Aging, and all of these documents are available on our website. So.
Thank you, Lisa. Very informative. Do we have questions? I have a hand from Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to make a comment. Since we saw, we got this presentation at Health and Human Services, and it is on the agenda as Resolution I. I was wondering, while it's fresh in our mind, if the chair of Health and Human Services could talk to us if you're amenable to it, and maybe we could consider it earlier in the agenda than where it is now, which is almost at the end.
Happy to do that, but I'd like to offer an opportunity for legislators to ask Lisa questions if they have any. Peter?
Yeah, Lisa, I was musing over your statement that there was no gerontologist in Ithaca, and
lack of geriatricians. Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, that's a really bad thing. But then it occurred to me, it's not the same thing as if you said there are no pediatricians, because every newborn baby needs a pediatrician. So that would be a disaster if we heard that there's no pediatricians. But it's not the same with older people. I mean, you don't. It's not necessary for all older people to see a gerontologist. That every doctor here that takes Medicare must know something about people of that age. And so I'm wondering how to interpret that fact. Is there a medical problem because there is no gerontologist in the community, or not?
Well, it's. Again, this is a problem that faces our whole nation, and a specialty in geriatrics. There is specialized training, and there is a specialized lens with which a geriatrician would look in treating older adults. So that's not to say that there aren't clinicians that are highly skilled in that area, but the training to be a geriatrician I think gives you some additional skills to look out for. You know, some very basic things that I've learned in working through my advisory committee, for instance, is that, you know, my physician is 40 years younger than me. He's more concerned about my cholesterol than I am. I'm concerned about falling on the ice and breaking my hip. And there are some very concrete and easy screening tools that a clinician can do and ways to promote falls prevention that if you're looking through that lens, I think that that's what there's much more to it than that. That's not my expertise for sure in terms of clinical training, but I think there's a lens that geriatricians have that others do not.
So, but if there were a geriatrician, there wouldn't necessarily be the primary care person that they saw. That is that correct? I'm trying to think this through. I mean, I'm sort of in the older person range, and I have a physician. And I would imagine if she came across something she had not seen before, she would want to refer me someplace. Mm-hmm. And does that mean that there would be no place to refer me?
I don't think that's necessarily the case. And I do think that there are physicians with that credential in town, but I don't think that there are as many as there are older adults in
okay.
this community.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Julie Kiefer.
Oh. I believe we could use a geriatrician or two here. I wanted to ask you about not this report, which was really interesting to read, but the item that you're going to pass out about an event.
Oh, yes.
Having been to a previous event.
Oh, yes.
I found it very useful that there were representatives from assisted living facilities that were not in Tompkins County because, as you said, there aren't any ones that accept Medicaid here. So will there also be from non-Tompkins County locations at this gathering?
Yes, I believe so. This we broadened the event this year, and it's entitled Senior Living Expo. Last year it was Senior Housing. So this year it will be the same housing providers that were invited last year. Are invited this year. In addition, there are going to be many other providers that assist older adults to age in place. So, for instance, FoodNet, Gadabout, the home care agencies will be invited. And the event is happening Saturday, April 18th from 1 to 4 at the Ithaca High School cafeteria. So we changed the venue also to make it larger.
Thank you.
Lisa, I had a question. And you said that we don't have any assisted care facilities that accept Medicaid patients. I was thinking that Longview used to do that. Is that true?
Longview,
have they changed?
Longview accepts individuals on SSI, and they offer some housing on a sliding fee scale. So, yes, they do. So there's a lack of when I say there's a lack of affordable assisted living, Longview is the option that does offer some affordable assisted living, but it's not nearly enough for, our community's needs.
All right, thank you. Any other questions for Lisa? Martha Robertson.
Thank you, Mike and Lisa. You've got him advocate for a medical model day program in Tompkins County. The reconstruction home used to have a day program. Now, is that medical model or was that, I don't know if they still have it, number one. Number two, I don't know if that was medical or if that was just kind of a day program, adult day socialization.
Yes. Now, that was a medical model program, and that is no longer happening here. We could use another medical model. There is a social model, and again, that one is at Longview.
Because that program at the Recon didn't last because they couldn't get enough people that wanted to be there to use it. I don't know if it was a funding issue, but.
Yeah, we looked into that a few years back with the Long-Term Care Committee, and there are certain components, too, I think, that like providing transportation to and from, and I'm not sure that that was a part of it. Yeah, there were certain components that maybe weren't in place to make it as successful.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Peter, do you want to move the resolution?
Yes. I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me, but...
Resolution I.
All right, I'll just move the resolution.
I'll read it. It's supporting Tompkins County's engagement in the World Health Organization, AARP, Age-Friendly Community Network, is ID 5443. Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy Lewis Herrera.
Yeah, this let's see. This was recommended by the HHS committee. I have a couple of things I would like to do. There's a copy in the green packet, in the red packet, sorry. Yes? Which has a correction, which I would like to consider a friendly correction, and I wonder if we can consider that.
Friendly to the seconder? Yes. Okay, that's agreed to.
Okay. In addition, I've had an amendment here that has been suggested by Legislator Chalk, and I would accept that as a friendly amendment if she would like to make it.
Yes. Can I read it for the benefit of people at home? Basically, what it did was just take some of the statistics from Lisa's presentation and add them to the resolution in case we ever want to have them at hand. So it just adds a third, right after the second whereas, it adds, whereas in Tompkins County, the population of people aged 55 and over is expected to grow from 9.257 in 2000 to a peak of 9,257 in 2000 to a peak of 15,431 in 2030, taking the total share of the 65 and over population from 9.6% to 15.3% of the total population. So I'll just move that amendment.
And Peter, you said that's friendly?
That is friendly.
Is it friendly to the seconder, Kathy?
Yes. It is.
All right, so that's agreed to. Peter, there's a little bit of confusion. The initial amendment that was agreed to, you said, was something here. I don't think we've kind of captured what that wording was.
What it is on line 24.
Please use your microphone, Peter.
Sorry. On line 24, the last, starting at the middle of the page, http://blah, blah, 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 blah. The rest of that line is eliminated.
Okay, and that was agreed to.
Yes.
Thank you. Helps us with our record keeping up here. Discussion on this? Are we ready to vote? All those in favor of, I'm sorry, Carol?
Oh, well, I just wanted to thank Lisa for bringing this and thank you for making us a part of this. I don't know if it's a conflict of interest that I'm going to join these numbers in 2 months. And as you went through your presentation in committee, I mean, it's just, you ticked through. I could have ticked through and talked for half an hour about what, you know, just my own personal experience of facing each of these things. I had literally come from trying to sign up for Medicare. I talk about totally unclear, insanely ridiculous materials that don't tell you the basic definitions of things until you get to page 75 of the materials. I can't imagine how people who don't have master's degrees and spend their lives reading materials are going to be able to grapple with that. And that's just one of your many, many items. So thank you, because this is, I think it's important that we set the standard here.
Thanks, Carol. Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? I believe that's unanimous. Thank you very much, Lisa.
Thank you.
And thank you, Doctor, for coming and supporting this. I just wanted to report briefly that the Bicentennial Commission that we have set up has had now three meetings, and we have really got into the structure of the committee at the last meeting. We had a great turnout, and we set up some subcommittees to start looking at some of the things that we may want to do in 2 years. Don't have a lot of details of those to report to you at this point, but one of the committees will be looking at how we can look at and educate and preserve faces and places and spaces. And we think that that's kind of an interesting way of bringing together a project that will commemorate the commission. But stay tuned. There'll be more. Yes, I have one appointment. To the Bicentennial Commission, Tim Scott. Tim is the deputy director of the Science Center. Let's move to the reports from the county administrator, Joe Mariana. We're having a conference here. Let's go to the county attorney while that's happening.
Okay. I'm not sure how long I can stall with a no report. but I'll work on
it. Spell no as in N-O, yeah.
Okay.
As in N-A-D-A.
In thinking about the matter very carefully, no report.
Thank you, Joe.
Tell them what to say.
I'll go back to Joe.
Thanks, Mike, and I'll take Jonathan's time. Mine's a little bit longer than usual, but not much. I have four or five items I just wanted to update you on. And then at the end, both Jay Franklin and I wanted to update you on the Cougar Power Plant pilot agreement, which has been settled. It's heading to the IDA, so we wanted to use a couple of minutes tonight from my time to brief you on that. Let me start by letting you know where I was last Wednesday. I was with a small delegation in Washington doing a little lobbying on behalf of TCAT. All of you know that TCAT has a pretty significant challenge in terms of its capital funding. On the operating side, things are okay. Not great, but okay. It's on the capital side for buying things as simple as buses, where they are dealing with some significant challenges. In the old days, a few years ago, buses were purchased with earmarks, congressional earmarks, and they went away. So now the challenge is, how do you fund the basics like buses? So I joined a group that included Joel Molina from Cornell University, Savante Myrick was there, Bill Gray from the TCAT board, myself, and also Diane Miller, who is Cornell University's Washington lobbyist. We had a very busy day. We met with some ranking officials of the FTA to talk about our needs and to hear what they're saying about the president's plan for significantly increased funding for transportation, including transit, and asked that we carry that message to Congress, which we did. We met with virtually all of our congressional delegations. So we met with staff. Congress is in recess. We met with staff from Congressman Reed's office, also Congressman Hanna, and Congressman Klatko. Hard time remembering that name. He's new. Also, we visited with staff of Senator Schumer and Senator Gillibrand, and we closed the day, again, a very busy day, with Governor Cuomo's Washington office, which is there to lobby on behalf of the state. We didn't return in a bus. We weren't that effective, but I do think we had some impact, at least in terms of reminding people in Congress that public transit isn't about only the New York City subway system. It's not only about the giant metropolitan areas. It's about communities like ours that do well with public transit. And we made the point. We weren't there because things were going poorly with TCAT. In fact, we were there because things are going well at TCAT. In terms of record ridership every year, in terms of a good organization, in terms of high quality, it's accommodating that growth and building that growth into both an economic and environmental strategy that we were there to ask for some help. So I think we did make that case. We established relationships. I have to say that Cornell was unbelievably helpful in aligning us with the right people in Congress and in participating directly. Joel Molina, as Vice President for University Relations, was right there with us every step of the way, including developing the briefing materials. So I thought it was time well spent, and hopefully something will come of it, because TCAT certainly could use some guidance in terms of capital funding. Next topic. When I was here last, we talked about circuit breaker. I was going to give you a follow-up to circuit breaker tonight. On advice of counsel, I'm sparing you a PowerPoint on circuit breaker tonight. But I will be making a presentation, or we'll ask Jim if I can make a presentation at the budget committee next time to get into some more of the weeds on how the circuit breaker will work. There is every indication that's going to happen, that it looks like the Senate has embraced it in a slightly different form that will involve rebate checks instead of credits, but it sure looks like it's going to happen. So we do need to come to an understanding of what the circuit breaker is all about, and I'll save that until the budget committee next week. Some really good news. I wanted you to know about Greg Potter. If you don't know, you should. That last week, Greg Potter received the New York State Information Technology Leadership Academy Hall of Fame Award for a career that is full of just excellent accomplishments. He was given the award at a ceremony this year at the IT Leadership Academy in Albany. So I think all of us know what Greg does, and it's the combination of establishing a vision but also applying management skills to achieve that vision, and it's really remarkable. The state has recognized what he's accomplished, so that was a well-earned award. Also some good news. The defibrillators, we talk about them all the time. It's been a long time coming. We're there. We're beginning to install defibrillators, and that's good news. But the other part of the good news is that over the past a few months, 75 of our employees have volunteered to take CPR training that includes training on how to administer the defibrillators. In addition to those 75 newly trained people, about 100 employees who at some point in their careers had had this training but it lapsed, have been retrained and recertified. So over the past couple of months, nearly 200 county employees have received training in this. And even if we didn't have the machines in the buildings, it's a good thing to have so many employees who have received this training, and a really good affirmation of who our employees are when you see how many people have volunteered for this training. We should thank a number of people. Brandy Crosby has been instrumental. Lee Shurtleff, Beth Harrington. Many people have been involved in this. And again, it won't be long before you see these devices in virtually every county building. I think the last element of my report is going to be the Cougar Power Plant pilot. And if we can just spend a minute on that, Jay and I would like to explain it. I'm going to get us started, and then when it gets hard, Jay will take over. You know that Jay has been central to this discussion for a long time. He brings a lot of expertise to the table and was very much a part of the negotiating team that has produced this new two-year agreement for the plant. We had to do it because the other one is expiring. So we needed to come to the table, put together a new pilot agreement. Given the situation at the plant, the term of the agreement, we decided early on would be just 2 years, because that's what we can foresee in terms of the operation of the plant. So the agreement that we have arrived at, and when I say we, this was a collaborative effort. It is under the umbrella of the IDA. But around that negotiating table were Jim Dennis, Mike Lane, Jay, myself. We had representatives of the Lansing School District, including its consultant, who is a professional appraiser, who does mostly utility appraisals. The town of Lansing was there as well as Michael Stamm. So it was a large negotiating group that it has come together several times now, including for this iteration. And Kathy, if you could just turn on the screen from my computer. Yeah, it should be up. I promise you, this is not a PowerPoint. It's going to show you how this new formula works. And just to kind of give it an overview, this will be the first time since I've been here that a part of this conversation about the pilot for the plant doesn't involve how much is going to go down next year. The real achievement here, I think, is really twofold. The first is we've set a floor on what the payment will be, and it's based on what's currently being received. So we are assured over the next 2 years of receiving the same amount of pilot income from the plant as we have the current year. So the good news is that we've established a very firm floor. This is extremely important to us, but especially to the Lansing School District and knowing that that money is going to be there. But then there's another element that we've added to this agreement. Just in case the fortunes of the plant turn, if there is, when it gets very hot or it gets very cold, and if I'm being put under the hot lights to see if I can sweat it out, that's okay. But there have been times over the past year or two when the plant has supplied energy for peak periods, when it's very hot and very cold. And when that happens, the numbers can look pretty good at the plant. So what we wanted to make sure of is if there is a windfall that exists at the plant, we're beneficiaries of that too. So the government benefits by a strong performance of the plant over the next couple of years. So a part of the vocabulary of the negotiations included this new phrase, pop-up. There is a pop-up factor built into this pilot formula so that if there is a strong performance, there's an opportunity for the pilot to be adjusted to reflect that strong performance. And at that point, maybe I'll ask Jay. I've got the computer over here, but maybe I'll ask Jay to walk us through how that will work, and then I can hit the right buttons and show you what happens under certain scenarios. Maybe, Jay, I'll begin by just showing what would happen if the net operating income of the plant was abysmal, if it fell to nothing. And you can see, I think, here, I mean, this is not a realistic scenario, but you can see even in that worst-case scenario, the pilot would be at $1.8 million. And then we've set a threshold of $14 million. If there's net income above $14 million, that's when the pop-up factor comes into play. So let's say it's $15 million. You can see what happens at the bottom line. There's an added infusion of revenue of $49,000 that raises the total pilot based on that performance of the plant. So, Jay, I don't know if you want to go into any of the other details about this or...
Jay Franklin, our Director of Assessment.
The only thing that I would add is the $14 million figure wasn't plucked out of the air. The $14 million pop-up threshold corresponds to the taxable value of the $60 million, which the plant's base tax payment is based on. So anything above what the base $60 million value would be based upon would be part of that pop-up payment. When you're valuing any type of income-producing property, the value is based upon what sort of net income that has. So the base minimum payment is based upon a value of $60 million, which is what it was in the last this year on the 2014 assessment roll. So that $60 million value corresponds to a net income of $14 million. Is that changed enough?
I have a few questions,
Carol,
if you don't mind. So is that $14 million of net income, does that include the income from the reliability support services agreement, where the ratepayers are covering that income?
Correct. That's part of the income to the plant. And without that RSSA payment, the plant wouldn't be operating.
Okay. Now, as part of that, some of that money was going to capital. But it's income that's being provided by the ratepayers that is somehow also counts towards their, you know, it goes into their annual budget because it comes every year, certainly. Is that included here as well?
It is included both as an income as an expense as well.
Okay. And then can you to limit my questions, what happens if the plant were to default in the next 2 years? Would they still owe us? Owe these, be paying taxes or the pilots, or would they owe nothing?
The agreement is for 2 years, so they would still have an obligation to pay us. I guess that would be more a Jonathan question as to how high up a pilot payment is on a lien.
Jonathan Wood?
Well, yeah, typically under a pilot, you know, a pilot is very much like a tax. It's a payment in lieu of taxes, and just like, excuse me, just like a tax, it doesn't go away because of your financial situation. In terms of the where it ranks on a lien, that's a different issue, which I'm not sure I can answer, to be honest. It would depend on, I'm not really sure that was the question, but you know, as Jay said, what our lien would be and where it would be compared to others, I'm not sure, because it kind of would depend on what the other claims against it would be. It would matter what sort of default it had, et cetera.
Okay.
But I'm not sure that, you know, that it's all that significant a question. I mean, they'd certainly owe the money, and very likely, you know, assuming it continued or whatever, the predecessor would, you know, just like a tax, would pay that.
The whoever.
Successor, yes.
Are we expecting that there'd be a successor? I mean, who would want this polluted property? Who would own the property if they walked away from it?
Well, I mean, the property is still in the name. Actually, the property is probably in the name of the
parent company.
Yeah, I mean, there's a various number of leases and subleases between Upstate Power Producers, the Cuga Operating Company with the IDA in there. So it I think it's pretty safe to assume that this plant will run through 2017, June of 2017, when the RSSA expires.
Yeah.
So they're more bound to, and that is when this pilot would expire, is with the 2017 town and county taxes.
Okay. Yeah. No. I understand that. I mean, who would? I mean, they've got somebody else, us, paying all the bills, and they get to keep any profits. So I don't expect them to walk away. But I am curious about, you know, what would happen if and when they did, since we have you here on this topic. If there weren't a buyer in the wings, who would own it?
Well, they would still own it.
They would own it. But
if they didn't pay their taxes, then that would be a decision for the county, and as being the tax enforcer for the county, and whether to foreclose on that property or not.
And then we would own it.
Correct.
Thank you.
Other questions? Martha?
I remember in previous iterations of the negotiations, there actually was a concern about our position in the line of payment, and property tax is like either at or the top of the list, at or near the top of the list. And Maria, the IDA attorney, was working on language to insert in the last agreement, I think, to make sure that the pilot payment would be seen by a judge as equivalent as taxes.
I think that's been a part of the last several pilots. I would assume that it still will be. I mean, you know, this has been in a pilot situation now for many years, and that risk is always there. That, you know, there's, even if it's a hair below, there's nothing like property taxes. And so the moment we decided to move this into a pilot for all the right reasons, that small degree of risk was inserted. But you're right, the attorney has done, I think it's called a pilot mortgage or something like that, to try to give it as much strength as possible to push it ahead of other claims on the property.
Okay, and I think the pop-up payment is great, and I appreciate that that's in there.
Okay, anything else?
Well,
Carol?
Since the topic came up, I'll just point out that I think property taxes would be the least of our problems should this plant close. The environmental cleanup, if we inherited the environmental cleanup, what are we talking, hundreds of millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars? But what they would owe us in property taxes would pale in comparison?
I would suggest that go to a different meeting. I mean, I think that's probably a topic unto itself. The representations we get from the plant are probably different than maybe your perception of it, but I think that's a topic that we really can't talk. We could talk about tonight. We probably don't have the time to talk about it, nor the expertise around the table. So we can bring that to a different meeting if you'd like.
Frost Travis knows more than we do about it.
John?
If I could add one thing. In recent years, we established a policy where we do not have to take properties if we find them to be environmentally contaminated and not in the interest of the county to do that. And that's one of the things that we do examine before we take every property, is whether that would make sense to take or not. I'm not making any comment in relationship to this particular property, but that is our policy with regard to all properties.
Thank you.
I would just like to say that this is a going concern at this point. This power plant is operating. It's selling electricity. It is employing people in our county. I think we're proceeding the right way to try to be flexible on how we assess and how we tax through the pilot agreement. But let's not assume that this thing is going to go down the tubes. Many of us believe that this is a going concern. Dooley Kiefer.
I missed most of the negotiating meetings, although in theory I was part of that, and I think that Jay and everyone came up with a really good approach for the next 2 years. With respect to Carol's concern, I think historically there's a chain of ownership of the property, and as long as someone in that historical chain is still functioning as a company, they can be gone too for this work, the thing that you're worried about if it comes to pass.
Okay.
Let's go.
Joe, anything else?
That's my report. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Let's suspend while we put up the lights and the screens. Thank you, Jay.
Quickly about the power plant.
All right, so you want to continue to talk?
No. Go ahead. I have a
Martha, why don't you
Just that the IDA has already seen this application and voted to send it to a public hearing, which has been scheduled for Monday, April 6th at 5:30 in the boardroom of the Lansing Town Hall, 29 Auburn Road.
Will?
Thank you. And Mike, I was just wondering if it would be possible to shift and consider Resolution H earlier in the agenda instead of waiting to the committee.
Sure. Do you want to do that now or after the Director of Finance report?
Whenever.
Let's get through the reports, and then we'll take that resolution.
Thank you.
Director of Finance is Rick Snyder.
Chairman Lane, I have no report for this evening.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was quick. I meant G.
Correct. Yeah, I'm sorry. I meant G.
That has to do with
the halt.
Solitary confinement issue.
Correct. Yes.
That was talked about by some of the speakers.
Yes.
So that is in – All right. So Nathan has had to leave us unexpectedly.
What resolution are you looking at?
Resolution We're looking G. at Resolution G. I guess that's out of your committee,
that's
Jim.
That's in my committee.
What? Sorry, I thought it was out of
page
public
24.
Safety. Page 24. Would you be kind enough to move Resolution G, please?
Yeah. It's a reso urging New York State Assembly and Senate to pass the Humane Alternative to Long-Term Solitary Confinement Act. It's 4401 in the Senate and 2659 in the Assembly, and the other way around. 4401 in the Assembly, and it's and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslie McBean Claiborne. Discussion. Dooley Kiefer.
Jim, I would like to propose a non-substantive change in line 31. Instead of saying, whereas a bill, it would say, whereas in January 2015, the Humane Alternatives, et cetera, was introduced.
Fine.
That's fine.
That seems to be agreed to. Martha Robertson.
In the last resolved, I think we should add leaders in the Senate and Assembly, Senators Skelos, Stewart Cousins, and Klein, and Assembly members Hasty and Cole. Those are the relevant folks.
Without objection.
No objection. Martha, just for...
Let me just say, a number of people in the community have been proposing this and working on this resolution. We've had people here before the legislature, and I think it, my sense of it all is from listening to all of those people that it's a time to do this, and sometimes you just have to do the right thing, and this is one of those occasions where you have to do the right thing and pass this resolution, and they need to do that at the state level also.
Leslie McBean Claiborne.
Jim said what I was going to say, but I just have a quick question for Martha. I take it all those names that you just mentioned are the people who are majority and minority leaders.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, Kathy has the typical list and that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Carol?
Yeah, I absolutely support this for all the reasons that have been said. The only question I had about it was whether there were competing bills at all that might be even stronger than this one. And my understanding from a little bit of research that I did is that O'Donnell, who I think had chaired the committee in the Assembly, had a bill, but there isn't a current bill. So I would just maybe include O'Donnell in the CC chain, because it's somebody
fine.
Who had been part of the committee and active and still is, apparently.
I'm going to have to say I'm not certain about that, but if there is, if someone has done that research and you want to include another name, that would be fine with me, but I'm not certain that there, I don't want to soften the impact of this by adding something that is, I don't know, is a true thing.
Jim, I don't think it would be a problem to include O'Donnell in it.
Yeah. Does anyone have any info on that?
Okay. I think they got folded together.
All right. We'll add that one, too. Mike Ziegler.
I just wanted to say I plan to vote on this. I just I'm going to bring up the same concern that I had in committee, that it doesn't really state here what we do with people in super maximum security facilities. I mean, those people are basically in solitary all the time. I'm not sure. I mean, this isn't meant to address that, and I understand that, and that's why I'm okay voting for that. But I want to make it clear that it doesn't address the people that are in super maximum facilities, because, I mean, those people, if they weren't in those facilities, would be probably on death row, I would assume. So just wanted to make sure that that's kind of clear, that that's not really what this is meant to address. So.
Thank you, Mike. And as we addressed it in committee, you're correct.
Okay. Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, thank you.
I'd like to take a resolution I think Jay is waiting for. I believe it is out of government operations. And it's resolution E. Is that correct?
Yes.
Dan Klein, would you move that resolution, please?
Gladly. I would like to move resolution E, resolution to urge New York State to delay the start of the STAR exemption to a personal income tax credit.
Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion. Ready to vote?
Could we just talk
Kathy?
About what it's about so that people
Dan, you want to speak to it?
Yeah, I'd like to call Jay up to talk about it better than I can.
Did you move the revised version of the resolution?
Yes, I
In the packet?
Yes, I did.
That's the one we're talking about, the revised version in the packet. Revised and adopted by committee. Jay, could you give us a brief overview of what this means?
Yep. And included in Governor Cuomo's proposed budget is a transition for the basic STAR exemption that's been around since 1998. So anybody who wasn't an owner as of the 2014 assessment roll would now receive a income tax credit on their next year's taxes as opposed to receiving the STAR exemption on their school taxes when they get it in the fall. So this has many, many issues that I don't think have been thought out, one of which is in the fall, people are going to have to come up with an extra $600 or $1,200 if they're enhanced STAR if they get their tax bill on their own. If they go through escrow, their escrow accounts will have been set up under the assumption their tax bills will be $600 or $1,200 less, so they'll end up being short. And the biggest thing is I've already granted STAR exemptions since March of 2014. If the governor's budget goes through, I will have to then send out about 450 denial letters saying Governor Cuomo has denied your STAR exemption and turned it into a personal income tax credit. You'll have to fork over the $600 and get it on your income tax. I think it's just bad public policy to change the rules of the game so far after you're going to make something start. So this resolution would urge that the start would occur with anybody going forward from the 2015 assessment roll, so we can at least notify people of this change. After writing this resolution, this proposal has been removed from the Assembly and the Senate's bill. So I don't know where that will go once everybody gets into a room. It's a good step. The state has the tools to administer this exemption, and after everybody just re-registered for the STAR exemption, by moving it to the state level to verify whether someone's eligible or not, hopefully won't let fraud creep back in.
All right, we have Martha, Carol, Peter.
So you said the Senate and the Assembly in their budgets have fixed this?
They fixed it by completely removing it to a transition to a personal income tax credit.
Okay. I wonder if you might, if we might be able to include when this gets sent to Albany, especially to the second floor. And I don't see governor's name is on there. Could you include a sample letter that would say, because of Governor Cuomo's budget, you know, this is what we're going to have to do, and this is what you're going to have to do. And by the way, we had to send out 450 letters to make this to this effect. I think that might be helpful to actually include the letter.
I'd be more than willing to draft that letter up if that's the wishes of the...
Just in case somebody reads these things. Thank you.
Carol?
Yeah. Why not just make our request as of the date that the whole thing gets implemented rather and not be able to have to send any such letters to anybody?
Our assessment calendar is very cyclical. So to if it were to start on April 1, I would have granted STAR exemptions from March 3rd through April 1, and just as a record-keeping mechanism, that would just be something that I don't want to get into. It's just easier to say it's going to start with this assessment roll year.
Peter Stein.
I'm sorry to be so slow on the uptake, but could you explain to me what the point of this is? Not our resolution, but what is the point of making this transition from the way it's done now till the way it's going to be done later?
Well, I wasn't as fortunate as Joe to go to Washington, but last Tuesday I spent it in Albany for my legislative lobby day. I'm also the president of the County Rural Property Tax Directors Association this year, so we went off, and what we've been told is that it's a budget balancing act. So it's about $100 million worth of savings that they won't have to send off to the school districts this fall, but it's just left pocket money because it's $100 million that they won't be receiving in income tax money. So it's a budget balancing mechanism.
Can I say it's a way to take credit for a tax cut?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Anyone else? Thank you, Jay. Are we ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Since we're taken out of order, I'd like to move to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair. Dave, could you give us your report and then move on to your resolution?
Yes, I can. Thank you very much, Mike. We had a relatively short meeting the last time around. We had a discussion with Joe about upcoming bond resolutions and capital maintenance on the various facilities within the county, which will be coming to our committee in May, I believe. We also had a presentation from Solid Waste, which discussed a website change and a new app that's going to allow you to find out what day your recyclables get picked up and so on and so forth. I guess it's a free app, and I guess they're also doing some advertising on the TCAP bus system. Passed a resolution for the old jail fire replacement project. And that was a committee-only resolution. And that pretty much concludes my report. And I have one resolution to move, and that is 5385. This is authorization to amend the capital plan to increase the project cost of the Pine Tree Road Bike and Pedestrian Paths Project, BIN 3950.43, Town of Ithaca, to $1,865,000, and appropriate $196,266 from Road and Highway Fund Balance to support the Pine Tree Road Pedestrian Trails Project. And I so move.
I have a second from Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion. Are we ready to vote? I'm going to ask for a roll call vote.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
I'll pass.
All right.
Let me go to others and come back.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Is there anyone who wishes to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
11 ayes, 2 noes.
That's agreed to. Thanks for letting me take that out of order. We'll go back to resolutions to be added to and withdrawn from the agenda. Are there any? All right, then.
I have an appointment to call.
All right. Go ahead. From the consent agenda?
Yeah. excuse me. Downtown Ethic Alliance, Nate Shinagawa will go to the next, put on the April 6th agenda so that Leslie McBean Claiborne will finish her term. And then.
Yeah, I believe that's on the revised appointment, so we've got that to be withdrawn.
So.
Oh, I'm sorry. It wasn't distributed.
Okay, so that'll be on the April 6th agenda, but pulled for tonight.
All right. Thanks, Martha, for that. Anyone else on that? So let's move to the consent agenda. Let me read the advisory board appointments that we do have. Out of Health and Human Services Committee, to the Recreation Partnership, Will Burbank. To the Greater Ithaca Activities Center Board, Kathy Luz Herrera. To the out of the Economic Development Committee, the Economic Development Loan Oversight Committee, Martha Robertson. And then the consent resolutions out of Health and Human Services. Resolution A, authorizing an intermunicipal agreement between the counties of Cayuga, Cortland, Jefferson, Lewis, Madison, Onondaga, Oswego, and Tompkins for public health. That's ID 5457. Out of the Government Operations Committee, Resolution B, correction of tax bill, Ithaca Housing Authority, ID 5422. Resolution C, refund of taxes, Groton Housing Redevelopment Company, ID 5421. Resolution D, appointment of temporary hearing panel off. Members. Someone call for that to be off? All right, that's off. So that's all of the consent agenda. Do I have a motion? Kathy Luz Herrera, seconded by Leslie McBean Claiborne. All those in favor of the consent agenda, raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? That's unanimous. Okay, let's go to Health and Human Services Committee. Peter Stein is our chair.
Okay. Well, the Health and Human Services Committee had an interesting meeting at the beginning of this month. We had a resolution from the county administrator, and HHS endorsed this resolution, which was to transfer $20,000 from the contingency fund to the Tompkins County Library to contribute to the salary of an outreach worker whose mission is to improve the ambience for pedestrians in various areas of the city, including the Green Street block east of Cuba Street. And just for your information, for those who don't memorize the geography, that area between the Green Street block east of Cayuga Street is where our Tompkins County Library is. And this is a new approach. We've heard about it before around this table, and I believe we've supported it. So that was discussed at the HHS meeting. We had an interesting, I think interesting and somewhat controversial presentation from the Drug and Alcohol Council, given by Stacy Congelosi. And she reported on some findings that had been made on how young people's perception of the dangers of alcohol, prescription drugs, tobacco, and marijuana, how those perceptions change from the sixth grade to high school. And she presented a rather compelling picture on it. When they were in the sixth grade, the students all thought that those things were very dangerous, and the perceptions were the same when they were in high school. Now, the perceptions in high school were the same for all except marijuana, and there had been it showed clearly that those same students who thought that marijuana was a dangerous drug in the early years in the sixth grade no longer thought so when they were in high school. You can make what you want out of that, but I found it interesting that seems to be where the young people's beliefs are. And we had a presentation from Frank Krupa on the Health Department. We've already voted on that resolution, but that resolution was to authorize the county to enter into mutual aid agreements with other counties in the area when in the case of public health emergencies. Sounds perfectly reasonable to me, and I'm surprised it hasn't been done before. And that's what happened at the last HHS meeting.
And questions for Peter. Julie Kiefer.
With respect to that last item you mentioned,
yes.
When I read through the agreement, there is one decision that we still have to make to enable this to go forward, and it's something that will probably need to go through your committee. We have a choice of having our health commissioner get approval from the chief elected official or from the legislature. So we have a choice in that document for us to make as a legislature how we want him to implement it.
I assume at the appropriate time we'll consider that at the HHS meeting. Let me see. Do I have any things to move here?
I think you have Resolution J.
Question? On this
yes, Carol.
Yeah. So at the committee, we had asked for some follow-up information as to, particularly on that latter report you talked about, as to what the there was a lot of information quoted that did not give sources or who funded the studies that were being sort of quoted. Did we ever get a follow-up to that?
No.
Thank you.
Kathy?
Actually, the answer that I thought that was given about the study is that the study was conducted by Tompkins County and that that's the source of the perceptions data that was offered, and I think that was stated unequivocally at the meeting. It wasn't funded by a pharmaceutical company, wasn't funded by outside interests. So I think that that's the information that was asked for, and it was answered at the meeting.
We had information presented about studies showing the relative effect, evil effects of marijuana relative to alcohol. And that was the studies for which we requested.
Yeah, that's not the study we were talking about. I mean, what Kathy Lou said was correct. That this actual data was taken by this organization, our local organization, the Drug and Alcohol Council.
And it was about perceptions.
And it was but it was just asking the views of children in children in the ninth grade and then children in high school.
Will Burbank.
That is true, Peter, but as you know from our discussions in the committee, as the presentation was made, there were assertions made about the effects of marijuana which were not substantiated and were referenced by as being true, but were not substantiated. So that was the source of at least several committee members feeling that it was not a very balanced report. If we decide at any point to come back to further discussion, I would really like to get some different perspectives involved.
Yeah, I'm not defending it. I'm reporting on what we heard from the Alcohol and Drug Council. That's what we heard. And apparently they took this data, and that's the data they found. And I don't know. Maybe they – who knows what they had to say. We certainly don't. But
they took the data on the youth survey, but they also referenced or made assertions in terms of the dangers of marijuana, which I think were unsubstantiated. So thank you for what it's worth.
Dennis.
I'm not going to argue the effect of weed at all, but I will speak about – that one comment that Peter made about young children in grade six have a, you know, think weed is terrible when they're 10 years old and they don't when they're 15. And if you know anything at all about the Ithaca City School District, they have an intense DARE program through K-5, K-6, and it's always about drugs. And as soon as you leave sixth grade, then you go into the general population, so to speak, at Ithaca High or wherever it happens to be in the county, and everyone's views changes about that. So it's not a mystery to me that anybody in sixth grade thinks it's awful, because that's what you're being taught almost on a weekly basis. And then as soon as you get to high school, the bigger issue is, are you going to be in a class on time, and how am I going to do in the college boards and things like that? So.
Kathy?
I just have one follow-up. I think it's healthy that across the country, municipalities and legislatures like ours are having discussions about public health and what our responsibilities are in public health. And I think this is something, especially with regard to things like marijuana and vaping and now powdered alcohol, things that we need to discuss and find out, you know, what data we can. And in some cases, the legislation is going to lag behind the enabling situation, like with powdered alcohol. I think we'll probably be seeing it a lot sooner than we can legislate about it. And I think that in the case of marijuana, I agree with both Carol and Will that there's a lot that's still up for discussion about that, and I think that we should welcome that. I also am cognizant that the Department of Public Health and its employees have a responsibility based on previous and longstanding assumptions, understandings, and some data about what the health impacts of various substances might be. I think that is subject to change, and that's what this is all about, and that's why I love living in this community, because, you know, if there's something to discuss and ways to look at it, we're going to do it, and we're going to look at the data, and we're going to figure out what's best for our community if we can.
Peter, can you move Resolution J for us, please?
Sure. If I can find it, I'll move it. H-I.
Oh. That's the appropriation from the contingent fund for...
It's on page 36 of the packet, Peter.
Okay, thank you. Resolution number J, appropriation from the contingent fund for terminal pay, Tompkins County Mental Health Department, and I'll move that resolution.
Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion? Short form roll call, please.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. All right, let's move to the top, the Economic Development Committee.
Mike,
I'm sorry.
I had a question for Peter and his
report. Go ahead.
Before we moved on.
Sorry, I didn't see
And I do apologize that I couldn't make the meeting. I was on my way here when someone called to say my daughter had injured herself at the track, so I had to go deal with that. I had a question about the first thing you reported on, which was the position. I forgot what it's called.
The what?
Oh, the social worker type position.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right, right.
Say it again.
The outreach worker.
The outreach worker, thank
outreach
you.
Outreach worker, yeah.
And so I was just wondering if, and for committee members who were there, if there was a full plan presented to the committee, more than what we've gotten in our packet, about what the position will be doing and how that will be carried out, et cetera.
You'll have to be a little bit more explicit about the question, because
was there information about the plan for how the position will be, well, hired for one? What's the job description going to look like? What will the position be doing, essentially? Was there more information? Was there a discussion at the committee about it?
Resolution was introduced by the mayor of the city of Ithaca, who, as you know, is a very good speaker. And I don't think there was anything. I don't recall. I see hands raised, so my colleagues will expand on this. But let me finish. I don't remember hearing anything about it except what I already knew. Namely, that they're not like policemen trying to look for harm. They're people who are more like law enforcement. Thank you. You can keep reminding me of that. they're more akin to social workers, and social workers who are easily acceptable from, I don't know, you know, from the way they dress or the way they approach people, and they're supposed to work with the people to try to show those people that they should go someplace else or not do the things that bother other people when they're in that area. That's what I took away from it. So if there's more to say, I call on Will and Kathy Lewis.
Peter, I'm glad you made that point, that this was they made the case that the success was going to be hiring a very, very person with a very, very special set of aptitudes and values. And, Peter, I can't remember the agency that was hiring. It was not through the city.
Family
Children. Thank you. Thank you. But they really saw this as trying to basically reach out and connect with people, not in a confrontive way or a law enforcement way, but basically trying to encourage in a positive way good behavior.
Kathy, you have something to add to that?
Yeah, I will add. We discussed the qualifications for the job and whether it should be someone with a social work background, and talked about how that person would need to be able to interact not just with law enforcement, but also with shop owners. And part of what was brought up was the concern on the part not just of the public about means of egress possibly being blocked, but also by the shop owners. And although the presentation from Mayor Myrick was very apologetic toward any perceived injustice toward the people on the commons who might be perceived as blocking the door, I was a little more proactive in the sense that I've been approached by people in what I felt was an aggressive way, in an intimidating way, on the commons, and I felt that it was important that this person also have some be cognizant around diversity of age and class, and that there be an understanding made that that person that was interacting with people not just say to them, you know, oh please, we don't want people to think you might be blocking the way, but for them to actually be able to say, look, the shop owner here has been having complaints because people are being intimidated by y'all actually standing here. If you could stand 3 feet over there and just be very specific with people about what's being requested, because a lot of times people may just be hanging out, but if they don't notice a little old lady with white hair that's trying to get in, that person could be intimidated. So we discussed that a little bit. As far as hiring practices and stuff, I don't think we talked about it in the detail that in retrospect I should have asked about it in. And maybe that's something that can be done. What I do remember is that there was a date stated for the start of it, and that date was the proposed date for the opening of the commons this spring. But it occurred to me afterwards that theoretically we're not going to have any delays in opening, but that might be that date of engagement of the beginning of that person's employment might change. It was a good discussion. Sorry we can't remember more than
It's fine. It's fine. I just wanted to know if there was more. Go ahead, Mike, and then I have a follow-up.
I have a hand from Mike Sigler, please.
I just have two questions. Something that Peter said kind of had me questioning. Is it how proactive is this person going to be? I mean, does there have to be an active complaint for this person to actually take action, or are they just going to be walking up to people that they think look a certain way? I mean.
Well, it was both.
Peter, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, that we didn't hear anything about that. All we heard was that, okay, I focused on the part of it that is our as the county legislature concern, namely the library. I don't know anything about what goes on the commons. I don't go there very often, but I go a fair amount of time to the library, and so I have personal understanding of what this problem is. And what the problem, I believe, is that there are a lot of people that at some times of the day stand in front of the library and smoke, and I don't know, they don't do anything terrible, but they Several people might be intimidated to have to walk through that group of people who are standing there. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the part of the problem that I see, and it's real. And I think that's understood, and I assume this person would use their judgment to try to figure out how to show people, could they go someplace else or be less, more dispersed or something like that. But I don't think there was any, certainly there was nothing at that meeting of that detail discussed.
Okay, then my question actually is for Jonathan. My next question is, are we going to, even though we're funding this, are we legally responsible for this person in any way? If somebody comes back and says, hey, this guy targeted me, I'm angry, I'm going to sue everybody. Are we legally on the hook for that?
Well, I can't, you know, the final arrangements as far as I know, but as far as I know, that person will be an employee of somebody other than the county, not the county. And I don't see a very good likelihood that the county can be responsible for that. Now, you know, presumably, I mean, if we were doing the agreement, we generally have an indemnify and defend and all that kind of stuff to make sure of those things, but I'm not really sure what the arrangement would be in terms of the agreement, et cetera. I don't really know the details yet, but I think it's very low risk. Let's put it that way.
Cool.
There are another number of hands, but let me just say that this resolution that's being discussed on this topic that was in HHS is going before both the Government Operations Committee and the Budget Committee. So there'll be lots of time to talk about this and vet some of these questions. So having said that, if someone else needs to speak, but I'd like to move on after this. Leslin, I think your hand was
up. That was the question I had, but thank you for saying that, because that was my other question. Is it going to go before budget and anybody
yes.
else? Thank
yes.
you.
Carol?
Just the answer to some of these questions was that it'll be an employee of Family and Children's Services, I think it was. The area that's being talked about extends from Green to Seneca Streets and from the east end of the Commons all the way to Route 13. And we had some discussion about, to answer your original question, will this be somebody just patrolling or wandering, you know, being available, patrolling is the wrong word, you know, or being called to areas. I think it's more the former. Any emergency kinds of situations or even situations that are starting to escalate, this person is not going to be expected to handle. They're expected to call in the police if something is escalating. And there was one more. We even had a discussion about whether it would be easier because of the extent of the area. You know, it isn't just in front of the library. And some of the issues there have to do with not only what people look like or whether they're smoking. It's that there are some harassment of people walking by and panhandling. And we had some discussion about whether it would make sense for any of these people to use bicycles. I forget who suggested that, but it seemed like an intriguing idea to those who were proposing it. Those are just some other details I remember.
All right. Thank you. And Jim, is your hand up too?
It is. Am I next?
You're next.
I'd like to call a question.
There is no question.
No, this there isn't. Oh.
We return
well, then why
we
are we
return
talking
to
about
the,
it? I guess
the
I'm
report.
Reporting about it. That's why.
So,
you know.
I mean, let's.
Let me just say, as long as you call to me, we could have a full afternoon meeting on what this person is going to do on the Commons, and we would never be able to decide what they're going to do because they have no power, and they're not going to be able to arrest anyone. And if I were this person, I would want an assistant so that when I start getting beat up, I want somebody to be able to call the police while I'm there. I mean, I. Take the $20,000 and don't even look where
okay,
it's going.
I think we're going pretty far astray here. Peter, I'd like to wrap up.
Comment. I don't know why we're talking about it now.
Exactly.
Because in the end, it's going to come to us in the legislature, and we can spend all night on it there.
Exactly.
And I ask, look here now. Peter gave her report, and I think I have a right to ask about his report. Is that a problem?
Yes, and you were given ability to do that.
Okay.
Okay.
And all more right, to let's, come.
All right, it's time for break.
Boy, is it time for
let's
break.
Let's take 10 minutes.
Yeah, when my voice gets to that level, it's time for a break.
We'll take 10 minutes, come back at 20 of, and we'll go back and start out with economic development. Next up is Martha Robertson, who chairs our Economic Development Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The committee has not met since the last legislature meeting, but last Monday I did represent Mike at the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council meeting in Binghamton, and everybody was wondering what smells so good over there.
That's what they were wondering.
Are you going to bring dinner for everybody next time? Well, all right. Excuse me. It just came this way.
Try sitting right next door.
Okay.
Everybody was wondering, what do we know about the governor's, you know, $1.5 billion competition called the Upstate Revitalization Fund? There were two representatives from the governor there, and they answered some questions, but mostly with, we don't really know until we know what the legislature does with it, you know, what comes out of the budget process. But in the governor's, among the governor's proposals, and there are a bunch of them, is $500 million for broadband, you know, broadband initiative. This is in addition to this $1.5 billion. There's another $500 million for broadband. Statewide infrastructure improvements, $115 million. Southern Tier and Hudson Valley Agriculture Enhancement Program, $50 million. Something called 76 West, a clean energy business competition in the Southern Tier, $20 million. Global New York Development Fund, $35 million. Economic Development Initiatives, $45 million. Tourism, $45 million. Community Revitalization and Restore New York, $50 million. And in addition to that, there is I think there are a few more I didn't actually get the technical names of, but in addition to this and the $1.5 billion, there's the Regional Economic Development regular process for CFAs, Consolidated Funding Applications. So, and we think that the $1.5 billion competition will be roughly on the same time frame as the regular economic development competition. So the long story short is, if somebody has an idea, they should work on it and get ready to do an application. Now, the TCAD is holding a meeting next week of some people to start brainstorming and putting together ideas for Tompkins County. And I will say about the $1.5 billion, they kept saying, well, this is based on the Buffalo billion, which was the $1 billion that the governor, you know, handed to Buffalo. Now, Buffalo did not have a plan for that money before the money was granted. They then had to come up with a plan. We're all supposed to come up with a plan that's based on sort of similar to that, which they consider a big success. A big question for the governor's people was, well, we don't have like one city. We're not a region that has a big dominant metropolitan area. How's that going to work for us? So they didn't really have a good answer. So basically, people are working very hard on how to understand this. There are going to be workshops around the region, and there will be one in Tompkins County. Obviously, we'll find out more in the next couple of months. I think the ED committee really, we're going to try to stay on top of it, at least from the point of view of trying to get information out about what all the opportunities are, because if these things start to actually happen, there are going to be a lot of opportunities. And this community is pretty good at securing those kinds of resources.
So the next meeting of the committee is April 6th. Among other things on the agenda, Tom Scriver from the Downtown Incubator called the Rev is going to make a presentation. So people will find out what's going on there.
Martha, thank you first for attending the REDC meeting and bringing back that report. It's still, in my view, is still questionable whether or not this 1.5 billion is going to go ahead exactly as the governor has proposed it, especially since it leaves at least four of the seven regions with nothing but, in my view, chopped liver.
Mm-hmm. Let me just answer that a little bit. Okay. You know, in the regional EDC council process, they have the big winners where it's two or three out of the 4 years we've gotten the big kind of the big grant, our plan, kind of an extra $25 million or so. The regions that win in the 1.5 will not be eligible through the council process to win the big grants through that process. So they're going to try to siphon off the two categories of regions and...
Well, I think stay tuned, Martha. I think you're right. Let's see what happens and what gets through the legislature
right at
this point. Let's see. I've got Peter Stein, then Carol Chalk.
Martha, is there any guidance as to what they're looking for? Like, suppose I want to apply for something. What is it that what are the criteria on which they're going to judge? This is a one-time, right? It's not like a target.
We asked them that question in every different way we could think of to ask it, and we kind of got the same "we don't really know" answer.
It is
over 4 years. It is different from other funding, because this is from the settlement that the Attorney General succeeded in getting from the banks. They actually have the money. And I asked, well, all these other council grants have been on a reimbursement basis, and you have to put the money up front first and then wait for the state contract, and it takes a year, it takes 2 years, whatever. So it's been really hard for some of the winners even to use the money. Will it be that way? And the guy said, well, they're thinking that this time it might be able for some projects to be money up front. So this 1.5 is supposed to be capital programs, capital projects. But they don't want projects. They want them to be initiatives. And no, we don't really know what that means. So, but basically, I think we should just, dream about what we want to do and figure out how to put it into the buckets that they want to have. And so I think that's kind of what people are doing. But there may be, in some cases, money up front instead of people having to borrow and spend and do the whole project before they get reimbursed. So that's good news.
The key word that they use is transformative, so your proposal needs to be transformative, whatever that means.
Yeah,
Carol Chalk.
It means they can't tell you, but they'll know it when they see it.
Something like that.
Yeah. Is it possible to get, whether those are materials that you're reading from or a copy of that list in particular of what the buckets are?
Yeah, I don't know if you'd understand.
Are they confidential materials?
No, it doesn't.
It's a PowerPoint, I think, isn't it?
Well, at least the list. You read from the list of what the different buckets were.
Sure.
I'd love to see that.
Sure.
Or tell me where I can, a link or something.
I mean, the point is, it doesn't mean anything until the budget is done. You know? I mean, I could give you this, and then in 3 weeks when the budget is done, there will be a different list. I think what I'm trying to communicate is, there's going to be money coming for a lot of different initiatives. If people think, gee, if we could just do this up at Chainworks with South Hill, and well, we should
start thinking big about, you know, about things that, gee, I wish we could do X. So.
Okay. Thank you, Martha.
I'm sorry if that's not more clear.
Well, it's not your fault. It really isn't.
So we set a visioning session?
Well, TCAD is doing that next week, so, yeah.
Let's move on to the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Dooley Kiefer chairs.
Oh. We're meeting tomorrow at 3:30, and we'll be hearing from Fernando de Aragon about the MPO and road issues. Then we will look at Dan Klein's fracking brine use in our county. And then we'll hear from the Planning Commissioner on several energy-related items. So it should be interesting. I don't have any resolutions.
Okay, any questions for Dooley?
Yeah, which did the specific energy issues we're going to be hearing about, as I recall, were New York Prize and with a deadline come, and another one that I have in my bag somewhere if people want to know.
Stay tuned.
Smart. Right. Something about smart and energy.
Community.
Smart community energy.
Smart energy communities. Yeah.
Okay. Dan, I moved up your resolution, but you may have a report for us in government operations.
I do have a report, but there's also a resolution for consent agenda that was pulled, Resolution D.
That's true. Resolution U.
So I'd like to move Resolution D, appointment of temporary hearing panel members, temporary board of assessment review.
Is there a second for that? Seconded by Dooley Kiefer.
But I'm the one who pulled it because I would like, Dan, to insert in line 14 the information that the people who are being nominated have all served in this position before. So it would read, after the name James Lane, each of whom has served in this capacity before.
I find that friendly.
Friendly to the seconder? I assume it is.
Yes.
We're ready to vote with that change. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have not met since our last meeting. We are meeting 1 week from today, Tuesday, March 24th, 3:30. In this very location. We have a very large agenda. We will be talking about the outreach worker again. I know that nobody has any questions about that one, so that'll go fast. The library use of space that's been vacated by the Finger Lakes Library System. We'll have some information about that. We're going to have an update on the Biggs parcel, just to hear about what the current thinking is on that spot. We will have some information about the Tompkins County government's officially designated newspaper and questions about how we might alter that. The issue of sparklers will be on our agenda. And if we have any time left, we will talk a little bit about parking around this building and more than that as well.
That won't take any time either. That,
yes, we might not get very far on that one. And there's more things in the agenda as well. So it's a lot, should be very interesting, and that's my report.
Questions for Dan? Dan, that was a sparkling report. Thank you. Charter Review Committee, we have not met since our last meeting. We will meet again on April 1st at 3 p.m. in this room, and we will continue discussion about our financial policies. Section of the charter, I should say. Can I answer any questions? Let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
thank you, Michael. I'm going to move right to Resolution F, which was or is Tompkins County adoption of the State of New York Deferred Comp Plan. I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera.
Let me give you a little background, and Joe can fill in the blanks. Every 7 years, we have the ability to look at our plan, and if we want to change it, we have to rebid it, and we've done that. We used to be with a company called IMCA or IMCA, one or the other, but they did our deferred comp plan, and we, a group of people in the county, not legislators, but people who matter, actually devised and did the process and made a recommendation that we change to the New York State plan. There are a couple of really positive things. The fee structure is less than what it costs to administer the plan before. The state is responsible, or this association will be responsible for the money aspects of it, and they're involved in compliance issues that they need to be involved in. And overall, I think it, from what I can understand, and Nationwide is the organization that manages the account. And overall, what I can understand, it seems to be a better operation for all of the employees who are concerned. And that's our recommendation. So, Joe, if there's anything you want to say.
I think I'd just take any questions that legislators may
questions?
Have. I think you've summarized it.
Julie Kiefer.
Well, since there was no copy of the plan with the agenda for me to look at, I asked staff to find one. And I believe Kathy called around and said I could find it at personnel. So I dutifully went over there. But what I was given was the ICMA Retirement Corporation plan.
That's it.
So, you know, you said we're leaving ICMA and going to the state.
Right.
So it would be the state one that I should have been looking at. And so it's just a small plea to make available copies of what we're going to be adopting in resolutions.
Okay. We'll see if we can take care of that.
That's fine.
I believe we had a message to employees out of personnel indicating that once this is adopted, if it is adopted tonight, that employees who are members of the deferred compensation plan will need to take action to convert to the new process.
Yeah, and there are a series of meetings.
Go ahead, Jim.
Next week that are scheduled throughout the county so that people can be there and be instructed on how to make the change to the plan. If they fail to make a change, they're automatically inserted into a what was it called?
Fixed.
What do they call it?
Yeah,
right. A static plan that basically is another way to invest the money. But the plan, and it's a very simple process to be included in the new plan, and you have to be a bit proactive to do that. And I'm guessing anybody who is involved in the deferred comp plan clearly understands why they are and what it means. It's their money, and so they're going to look out for their own money. But we're giving the opportunity for people to push the button on where they want to go.
Kathy?
One thing I remember from the presentation is that employees will have to switch over their beneficiaries. That won't be automatic. So there's a transition date that's a scheduled date, and what was that, June or something?
Mm-hmm. June.
So don't panic, and those aren't going to be the only times to talk about it. But if you're like me, when it comes to finances, you want to find out as much as you can. So.
Yeah. Thank you, Kathy. You're right.
Are we ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous.
The next item we have dealt with, and our next meeting will be March 23rd, 4 p.m. right here. And, Joe, I'm guessing that we have decided upon April 27th for the...
I think that's, if that's a Monday, I think that's the date
April
that works for most
for the
members.
Retreat to levy setting retreat.
What's that date again?
I'm sorry?
What's that date again?
4/27.
And the time, I'm sorry, 7? 5?
5:30.
5:30.
Thank you.
Okay.
That concludes my report. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, Jim.
Sure.
The old library committee has been inactive for a few months. However, I've been alerted that it's we're expecting the responses to the RFP back from the developers. So we will be scheduling a meeting of that committee to begin review of those.
Mike?
Carol?
Can you tell us a little bit more about the process moving forward for that? And at what points there's be an opportunity for legislators who aren't on the committee to come and hear from the developers? What's going to be the process if you get those?
Well, we're first of all going to receive them and we're going to review them. And the selection will be made by the full legislature. We expect to have a resolution bringing forth a recommendation. I don't think there'll be more than one recommendation, but it could be. And if you want to come to our meetings, you're more than welcome to attend.
Well, I'm asking for what the process will be by the committee to review the proposals once you get them back. Are you just going to, is it only written materials? Or are you going to have presentations?
That's to be determined. We haven't made a decision on that.
Thank you.
Because we haven't had another meeting since our last one. I guess that makes sense. Public Safety Committee.
Thank
Jim,
you.
Vice Chair.
Nathan has retired to his home, and I am going to try to do this in his behalf. Let me just move to the resolution H, which was on page 31. It is urging New York State to fund probation departments and other impacted county departments and agencies the full cost associated with raising the age of criminal responsibility to 18 years of age, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Will Burbank. Discussion.
Comment. Clearly, this is one of those things that the state wants to do. There's been apparently widespread support for this, and the thing that I would certainly caution you about is that we would love for them to continue to pay for this, because sometimes, as you all know, they pay for the first couple of years, and then 3 years from now, it becomes our responsibility, and we have yet another wonderful, probably in substance, but mandate that we end up having to pay for. So I think that's the thrust of this resolution.
Carol?
Yeah, this came out of committee unanimous. I asked that it not be on the consent agenda, though, just so people can reflect on it. My only hesitation on it, and I will vote again for it here unless I hear a discussion that convinces me otherwise, this is absolutely essential that we stop considering people under 18 and treating them when they go astray, to treat them and put them in jail and penalize them as if they were adults, with the implications and what they get exposed to in adult jails, both for themselves at the time and for their chances for rehabilitation into mature, functioning adults, following ways different from the folly of their youths, potentially. So I think it's important to do it. My hesitation is, so I support the state doing it. My hesitation on this one is that we not be able, I'm worried that we'll be taken out of context by those who oppose the bill potentially and cited as a county, see Tompkins County has resolutions, reservations about it. Sorry, it's getting later. So I just don't want it to be construed in any way. In other situations, in another state that wasn't giving us such a hard time about helping us pay for things that they order that we do, I would want to see the policy be passed first and then fight with the state about that they really need to pay for it because they're ordering it. But that tactic hasn't worked in the past on other things, so I think we need to do this. But I'm going to rue the day that it gets taken out of context and cited by anybody
wrong, not in the way we intended it.
Arthur, then Mike.
I don't really think there's a lot of danger of that. I think there's a lot of consensus that this is, that the policy is right, and the fact that the governor has said, and some of his people have been in the media saying, they're going to cover all the costs, really indicates that they understand the idea that this is an unfunded mandate. However, the trick is in the details. What is it that they consider the resulting costs? And the concern is that they're going to see, you sort of define that very narrowly, where we're going to have other things that are at the moment unintended. Carol, I don't think we have to worry about that. I think there's a lot of consensus that this is going to move forward, and I haven't heard any discussion about it except what about the cost to localities.
Mike Sigler.
I'm going to vote for this because, I mean, there needs to be a cutoff age. It seems like 18 is a fine age, but can we not kind of pretend that people that are charged at 17 and 16 aren't charged with, like, kind of horrific crimes? I mean, it's not like they were picked up for jaywalking or for, you know, shoplifting, and then the DA said, hey, let's charge them as an adult for this. I mean, some of the crimes that these people are charged with are horrific. Doesn't mean that they should, you know, go through the adult system, but let's not pretend that there aren't real victims there that aren't impacted by this, and that some of these kids, you know, have done some terrible, terrible things. So that's my only caution when we talk about something like this, that, you know, real people were harmed. And so the part of the reason I'm voting for this is you need to set an age. It seems like 18 is the appropriate age. So.
Kathy Lou Serrera.
Thank you. I think it's important for us to go ahead and take a stand on this. It doesn't matter to me what people might think of it in the future. I understand what Mike's saying. You know, there are some folks out there that are bad people and they do bad things. What we do know is that there's a disproportionate number of young people of color and young economic people that are economically in a bad situation that get charged with crimes. And so this may help, it may not. The thing that we have, I think, to do here is we're stewards of the public's money. And it's important for us to recognize that there are going to be costs. And it's important for us to say to the state, we hope you keep your word on this. And I think it's important for us to go on record. We can always be criticized. Take my word for it. We've got thick skins. And I think that it's important for us to act in the best interest of the taxpayer here. And that's one of the many reasons I'm voting for this.
Ready to vote? Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Jim, are you opposed?
No, I'm not.
Okay, that's unanimous.
Favor.
Jim?
Let me conclude the report by some personal views of yesterday's meeting that we had, the sheriff's report on the Hornbrook Road incident. I thought Under Sheriff and our ex-colleague Brian Robinson had prepared a pretty extensive report on what happened up there, and clearly there are differences in the community on what should have happened. There are those who, I mean, you all know what the opinions are, and I believe, I don't know if the report completely answered everyone's questions, and I don't think that everyone's questions can be answered. That's what happened. This is how the county responded, and there was a result. Many people, you know, everyone has an opinion on it. But from my point of view, I thought these people put together a proposal, and they described it the way they saw it happening and how it happened for them over that 35, 40-hour period. So around the room, there were some suggestions, demands, cries for another report, an investigative report. I think that would be pouring money, good money after other money. That I don't think that's necessary. I don't know, first of all, where you would find someone to do that. I mean, you could get someone in here, and they could go through the whole thing, have presentations, have angry people shouting at them, and you would still end up with the same result. A house was taken apart, and a man died. And none of that is going to change. And that's what, you know, it would. So it would seem like to me that would be a waste of taxpayer money to do that. I think the most important thing that came out of it for me was some of the inferences made at the end of the report, where they stated the things they've learned and how they would approach things in the future. And from my point of view, that's as good as it's going to get coming out of that. Out of that complete incident. And if we're able to do that, then I think we've gained something from it. But an overall tragedy that was dealt with and it turned into a tragedy, loss of life, that's terribly unfortunate. But I think we have to take the information we heard and move on from there.
Okay. Questions for Jim? Thank you, Jim.
Mine?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that I also heard people asking us what are remedies. And I think they were asking us, can't we come to you for a judicial remedy? I mean, and the answer is no. You know, you really have to go to the courts for a judicial remedy. And they were asking us, can't we come to you for an independent investigation remedy? And no, because it's our department. If you want that, you know, there's other places you would have to get it. And the one area that I think that we did talk about that you alluded to is, for ourselves, as we would after any big incident in any of our departments, and because we do it as part of our work, you know, what are our own, what are the ways that we will want to look at what we do moving forward? And that's the part I think that we can do and that the committee and the sheriff's department all do seem committed to doing. So I thought that was, a positive part of the report.
That concludes my report. Thank you.
We'll move to Workforce Development or Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. And Leslie McBean Claiborne is our chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet next Wednesday, 3:30, in the old jail conference room. And following that meeting, I hope to have more substantive information for you with regard to our climate survey and where do we go next.
Questions? Thank you. Let's move to minutes of the previous meeting, March 3rd. We have a motion. Will Burbank is moved, seconded by Jim Dennis. Discussion? Ready to vote? Those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? One opposed. We are now going into executive session to discuss labor negotiations. We will come out of executive session to adjourn, but we aren't expecting to take action tonight. Can I get a motion to go into executive session, please? I have one from Dave McKenna, and I have it seconded by Leslie McBean Claiborne. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed, that's unanimous. We'll go into executive session.